September 18th, Jeremiah Dini Durbin, Ishtagosti, Part 2.
Before we start, I'd like to ask, since you can control once you're in the computer, I'd like to do a cut and paste and put something in from last night. And I want to interrupt with my flow of thoughts now so I don't forget to do it again like I forgot last night. I promised the devotees that I was going to talk about carrots, but I forgot last night. So if Atul Krishna Prabhu, you can kindly put it in just after I say the prohibitive foods of Chaturmasya are such and such. Then, now I'll start the new sentence. And for all year round, there are four prohibitive foods, which are onions, garlic, carrots, and red lentils. Carrots is the most surprising one, because we always learn that it's good for the eyes and good for the health and such a pure food. So, in Australia in 2002, in Shila Gurudev's Hari Katha Festival, one devotee named Sanjay told Gurudev that I heard one story about a Brahmana's wife who ate part of a cow during a cow sacrifice, and then part of the meat turned into carrots, and so we're not allowed to eat carrots. Is that story true? So Gurudev said, the story is quite true because it comes from the Puranas. It comes from Śrīla Vyāsadeva. Śrīla Vyāsadeva knows everything past, present, and future. Śrīla Vyāsadeva also manifested the Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna states what is in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance, both in behavior, in types of people, in types of work, in minds, and also in foods. Sattvic foods, that is, foods that are in the mode of goodness, rajasic foods, foods that are in the mode of passion, and tamasic foods, foods that are in the mode of ignorance. So it turns out that carrots, red lentils, garlic, and onions are all in the mode of ignorance. Why did Prabhupada allow carrots and even teach us how to make carrot halva in the beginning? Because he was taking us from nowhere. He had no support system, no society, only materialistic things all around us. So he already brought us up with so many rules and regulations in the kitchen and preparing prasada and what to eat and what not to eat and what to do and what not to do, in changing our schedules and teaching us Mangal Aarti, so many things. So he said that there's so many more rules and regulations, but in the meantime, do what you have, chant Hare Krishna, and then the rest will come. So now the rest is, as you can see, is gradually coming. In fact, Srila Prabhupada requested Gurudev just before he left this world to keep them gradually coming. So regarding carrots, Gurudev said, yes, this is a very true story. So then he had Madhav Maharaj tell that story in detail, which was that in Vedic times, one would perform either horse sacrifice or cow sacrifice to prove the efficacy or the effectiveness of the mantras that are said, performed by, in the sacrifices by great kings for the benefit of the world, for the benefit of the universe. The sages would perform sacrifice. As you might remember from the Ramayana, the sages were having trouble with the demons, so they requested Dasarath Maharaj to give Ram so that he could kill the demons, so that the sacrifices performed by the sages for the benefit of the universes could continue without obstruction. So there's a point in the sacrifice where they kill, they sacrifice and then chop up into little pieces the cow or horse, and then throw that in the fire. And then at the end of the sacrifice, that same cow, very old cow they used, comes out to be a brand new, healthy, young cow. So while the sacrifice is going on, and while the cow is chopped up into little pieces, the wife of the Brahmin who was performing the sacrifice was pregnant, and she had an urge to eat. That's where you get the thing of, at least in my country, America, pickles and ice cream. for pregnant ladies. I don't know how it is in South Africa. So she had an urge to eat, and she was remembering something that she had heard from somewhere, that if a pregnant lady has an urge to eat and she doesn't fulfill that urge, then her child will constantly salivate and be a problem for the child and for the mother. So she had an urge to eat meat. So she took one of the pieces of the cow and hid it, thinking that she was going to eat it later. So in the meantime, the sacrifice was going on, and the old cow that was chopped up turned into the new, healthy, beautiful cow. But the Brahmin saw that a little piece was missing. So he went into the trance of meditation to find out why. And then the that little piece, in the meantime, the wife saw that that little piece also had life in it now, because it was also given life. So she got really scared, and she threw it away, very far away. And so that piece of meat turned into, or grew four things out of it. One was red lentils, one was carrots, one was onions, and one was garlic. So the carrots and the onions grew out of the flesh, the red lentils grew out of the blood, and the onions, garlic, which is white, grew out of the bones, which is also white. So the same result that one gets from eating meat, one gets from eating those things. And Gurudev specifically mentioned he was on a morning walk in Washington about 10 years ago, and he said the same result that you get from eating meat, which is that besides all the sinful reactions, that in this life you become violent and lusty, the same thing you get from eating carrots. Then there was some rumors going around that, well, in India, the carrots are very red, so they like blood. But in America, the carrots are light orange, and so it's very pure. And I mean, in the West, so everything is fine. And so there was two parties, one thinking one way, one thinking that all carrots are bad. So then, in order to solve it, one of my godbrothers, Trilokanath Prabhu, was on a morning walk with Srila Gurudev in Toronto about 3 years ago, and he actually had a carrot with him on the morning walk, a light orange carrot. And he said that one of our god sisters was making carrot cake and distributing the prasadam, but then we're wondering, because he said that about carrots, is this all right? So then he showed that orange carrot. And first Gurudev said, well, that's an orange carrot. It's not like blood, like the red carrots of India. So you can take it, but I don't take it. I don't take either one. So then the conversation ended there. But then the devotee began thinking, well, we offer our bhoga through the guru, and if he doesn't take it, then is it going to be prasadam? So the next day, he asked Gurudev that question that we're now wondering. You don't take it. We have to offer our prasadam through you. So the question is it really prasadam? So Gurudev said, yes, that is the question. So that was the end. So at least those of us who read that were convinced that it's all carrots. Okay, so that was the cut and paste. Now we'll get back to... First we'll do the codes of honor. And then we'll do the nonviolent communication. And within talking about the codes of honor, maybe I can just take a minute first to talk about the seven habits of highly effective people, because we all want to be highly effective in our bhajan and in our preaching, because you all have a spirit of preaching and you want everybody in South Africa to come to Krishna consciousness. So the first habit is be proactive. Proactive rather than reactive. Reactive means that I just react with anger or with emotion to what somebody says to me or what somebody does. And proactive means I consciously respond instead of react in such a way to make a harmonious situation out of what first looks like a conflict situation. They gave the example that the father was sitting at the table and he had a cup of juice and his little girl accidentally knocked over the cup of juice. And it fell all over his brand new suit that he just bought that he had to go out on business with. So then he started yelling at the kid, stupid idiot, how could you do that? And he started yelling at his wife, you stupid idiot, how could you have left the juice at the corner of the table? You should have known better. So then he went to get ready for work, and the kid started crying, and the wife was all agitated. And so then he was late for work because of all of his agitation. And so since he was late to drive the kid to school, who was in the middle of crying and all upset, then because he had to drive quickly, he got a speeding ticket for $60. And then when he got to work, he realized that because he was so agitated, he forgot his briefcase with his computer and couldn't do any work. And then when he came home, his wife was all agitated and there was a strained relationship between the wife, kid, and him. So that all could have been avoided if instead of saying, you stupid idiot, why did you, he could have said, knowing that the kid's going to feel bad, because knowing human nature that everybody wants to do the right thing, though we may not know how, we may not have the tools. With that mentality that everybody wants to do the right thing, he could have said, saying that she was in anxiety, he could have said, no problem. I'll just go change into another suit, no problem. And with a big smile, and then the kid would have loved the father so much and would have been much more careful, would have still felt bad, but would have been grateful to the father and would have learned how to respond to other people who do the same thing to them. So, first one is to be proactive rather than reactive. Then the second thing is to start with the end in the mind. Start with the end in mind. And they said that the best, most famous athletes, when, let's say they have to run to a finishing point, they have in their mind that finishing point. They're not thinking of obstacles or anything else, they're just thinking of the finishing point. And they win. So begin with the end in mind. The other example they gave is suppose it's the end of your life and it's your, your burial or your, what do you call it when you get together, funeral or whatever the case may be. And everybody's talking about you and you're in the back watching. What are they going to say about you? So that's the end. So thinking, I want them to say the best things about me. Begin whatever you're doing in your team with the end in mind. And of course, our end is Manjari Bhav. Our goal of everything is Manjari Bhav. And then we have the goals of the particular project, the particular team, or a particular conversation. Like you're meeting with somebody about some situation, you start the conversation by saying, what's the goal? What's the goal of our conversation? What do we want to achieve by the conversation? And then once there's a goal, then it could be a process. And then meditating on the goal in our spiritual life, meditating on that you've already made the goal. So then we meditate when we say our Gayatri, that I'm already serving my Gurudev there. It's not Sahajya. I'm not really thinking that I'm a Manjari. It's my desire body that I've created. And you could call it positive thinking or affirmations or the law of attraction, whatever you think about, that's what you attract. So we learned that from Gurudev that I should meditate on myself there doing the services that we read about in Galapagos Manjali and things when we're doing Gayatri and chanting. Because begin with goal in mind. So then the third one is always put first things first. A lot of times we do what's emergency rather than what's urgent, not emergency, what's urgent rather than what's important. If we keep putting the important things first and the first things first, then we'll be able to accomplish our goals. If we keep doing that, what's the need for the moment, even if it's not important, but it's there in front of me at the moment, then my priorities won't get done. So the next one is always go for win-win. Not I win and you lose, because then it'll come back to me and you'll want to get even with me later, or you won't be such an enthusiastic team member or spouse if you see that I've tried to win over you and I did win over you. And also, don't go for a lose-win, I lose and you win, because then, then it will haunt me and I'll want to get back. Rather, always go for a win-win. You should win and I should win in any conversation. One way to do that is, the guy calls it the Indian walking stick, but it could be anything, like a pen or a spoon or a paintbrush. That is, let the other person talk first, and then the only thing you're allowed to say, like you can do this with the kids too, you can train them in this way. Let's say Radhika and Sudevi are having a conversation, and they're in the same family. So as the parents, you say to them, okay, now Radhika, you have the spoon. So Sudevi, you're only allowed to speak while it's Radhika's turn to either reflect what she said, repeat what she said, paraphrase what she said, ask her a question about clarification of what she said. And then when Radhika is fully convinced that she's been understood, validated, heard, and appreciated for what she said, then the spoon gets passed to Sudevi, and then the only thing that Radhika is allowed to say is either reflective listening, repeating back the same thing to make sure that she understood, paraphrasing, which is even harder, which shows that she's understood, asking relevant questions to clarify so that Sudevi can explain something that Radhika might not have gotten. And then when Sudevi is fully confident that she's been heard, understood, validated, then she passes the spoon back to Radhika. And then the result of that is win-win. And that's exactly, as you remember from Srila Gurudev on good communication, that's exactly what Gurudev was saying when he said, you won't understand Bhakti Tattva Vivek until you understand this principle. Just like many of you know, we had an example recently. I promised Achyuta Prabhu that I would go to his house in the morning in Paris, in Maritzburg. But on the way from the airport, Atul Krishna Prabhu and Rukmini Didi said that there's a very wonderful program the next day that Sudevi could arrange at the Hindu temple. So we had an opportunity to distribute a lot of books because we have the book sponsorship program and get Harikatha mailing names for the mailing list. So I said, I'd really love to go, but I don't want to go out against my promise to Achyuta Prabhu. So then we thought, okay, let's see if Achyuta doesn't mind changing. But he said, no, I can't change it because certain people are coming at certain times from elsewhere. So, okay, that was fixed. So then the Santi called Rukmini and said, okay, we can't change that, but how can we have a win-win? And because she left it up to the intelligence of Rukmini, Rukmini in 1 second said, okay, you come to the Santi. So both things happened. Okay, so then, so the first habit is what? Remember? Be proactive. Second habit is begin with the end in mind. Third habit is
win-win.
Always go for win-win. Okay, now it comes to, put first things first. Okay, I put the first thing first, now I'm ready for the second thing. No, always put the first thing first. Of course, you can give a drop of time to the second thing, but not at the expense of the first thing. Then comes the fourth is win-win. Then the fifth is, which we've discussed within the win-win, which is understand the other person first, seek to understand, then to be understood. In fact, this is also stated in the Bible. There's some principles. Oh Lord, when will I desire to understand rather than desire to be understood? When will I desire to love rather than desire to be loved? So it's all coming from the Shastra. Then the number six, that was number five. Number one is be proactive. Number two is what? Begin with number three, put first things first. Four, always go for win-win. Five, first seek to understand and then be understood. And then number six is called synergy. Synergy means that the whole is equal to more than the sum of its parts. One and one is not two, one and one is 11. Three and two is not five, it's 20. That is, when we work as a team, putting the team first and myself second, then we get what's called synergy, which means pooling our ideas and thoughts, and disagreements are great at the beginning because everyone's coming from different universes and different backgrounds with different kinds of intelligence, different kinds of karma. It's natural that we'll have different opinions in the beginning. So difference of opinion is great, but not at the end. It's great at the beginning. And so then when we pool our ideas with the knowledge of how Gurudev said to make decisions, which is best unanimous, if not, then majority rules, then you get what's called synergy. Better than your idea plus my idea plus my idea plus my idea, combined together, better than the sum of those parts. And number seven is called sharpening the saw. Sharpening the saw means, suppose some guy is sawing a log with a dull blade. And he's sawing and sawing, and the more he saws, the less happens. So then somebody says to him, why don't you just sharpen the saw? So he says, no time. I have to saw. So sharpening the saw means developing all the good habits of communication. Okay. So I'll ask you to tell me again, if you can all call out together, what are the seven habits? Number one is be
proactive.
Number two is begin.
With the end in mind.
Number three is put. Four is always go for. Five is always seek to
understand. To be understood.
And then to be understood. We also want to be understood. And within that is a walking stick that I pass back and forth. For the spoon. Then number six is synergy. And number seven is
sharpening the
saw. Good. Okay. So now we'll go into the codes of honor. In order to, everybody has their own rules and own conceptions of how to do things. Especially in stress and strain, we all have a different, we revert to what is our conception of how to do things. Like my conception may be to blame. Another person's conception may be to yell. So we all have our own conception. So it's natural that if a team falls apart, if a marriage falls apart, it's because we didn't agree on the rules of the game. So the code of honor is the agreeing on the rules of the game for a marriage, for a friendship, for a team. So it's not a value. A value is like our team. The values of our team are integrity, team spirit, But that doesn't say much, because your idea of integrity may be more than mine. My idea of integrity may be to call a spade a spade. If I, which means that I look for the faults. Rukmini didn't wake up from Mangalarti. Did you hear that, everybody? Rukmini did not wake up from Mangalarti. I don't know if I want to eat her prasadam today. She's quite contaminated. So my conception of integrity is to call a spade a spade. So your conception of integrity may be, don't blame anybody. Take responsibility for all misunderstandings in any conversation. And if Rukmini didn't come to Mangalarti when you came to her house, just think, she worked so hard yesterday, she stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning, and probably she's dreaming about Mangalarti. So, it's not a value, but it's a rule of conduct that everybody gets together as a buy-in and agrees upon. Because if everybody doesn't have a buy-in and an agreement, then nobody's going to feel very responsible to, nobody's going to care to do it. But if I made it, then I care to do it. And the codes of honor are equal for the most senior devotee and for the most junior devotee. For the one who just joined yesterday and for the one who joined 40 years ago. So, who's ever there in the team, they make the rules together. And if there's one person who doesn't like the rules, he has the option to join another team and make rules of that other team. And then once the rules are made, then any new person that comes into the team, he hears what the rules are. Of course, there can be an additional rule made if everybody agrees. But generally, if a new person comes in, it's not a volunteer thing for him. That is, we don't criticize each other. Well, I'd like to criticize each other. Okay, then maybe this isn't the best team for you. All right, then. So some examples of codes of honor, which you're probably wondering, okay, what are they already? So every team makes its own code of honor, but the guy is giving examples of codes of honor that have worked. Like, for example, in one company, there was the bosses, the foremen, and the workers. And the foremen used to publicly humiliate the workers. And what did the workers do in return? They didn't really want to work very hard. And so the productivity of the company was very low. So then they made the codes of honor, and one of the codes of honor was no public humiliation. You speak to a person directly, privately, and politely. And as soon as that happened, the productivity came way up, and that became a very giant company. So the codes of honor are very powerful. So some examples of the codes of honor are stick with a disagreement until it's solved. Say to the other person, well, is there anything left over that's still on your mind? And then keep agreement. If you agree to something, keep it, and if you, for some really super good reason, you can't agree it, can't keep it, let the other person know in advance. And commit to communication skills, like learning nonviolent communications, for example, learning coaching. Coaching means that in helping another devotee, we bring out the best in them. The coaching system brings out the best in the other person and lets them solve their own problem, come to their own goals of their projects or their sadhana, and in that way their self-confidence expands and their imaginative genius expands. Coaching goes under the premise that everyone has creative genius. And rather than give advice, I ask the person, well, what's your goal, for one thing? What are the challenges that you've met, and how have you overcome them? And how will you overcome? And then they have to answer it. All of a sudden, an answer comes out of their head. And how will you overcome the remaining challenges or the remaining obstacles? And by what date do you expect to overcome them? So then, another example is, be responsible. Don't lay the blame on anybody else. Don't justify. Another one is, find solutions instead of dumping on others. Think of the solution yourself. No gossiping. No criticizing. Or no finger pointing. Like we quoted yesterday from Maharaj Parikit speaking to the cow, when the cow wouldn't blame Kali for beating his legs. So Parikit Maharaj said, oh, you who are the form, the very form of religion and the form of a bull, you know the principle that the identifier of the, I forget what he said, mischief monger or evildoer, gets the same destination as the performer of the evil deed. Celebrating each other's wins, rather than pointing out each other's faults, celebrating each other's wins. Wow, that was awesome. You really did a great job. Using the walking stick in conversations. Here's a good one. Never neglect a teammate in need. There's one, Sajjan Maharaj, you all know Sajjan Maharaj, he was the pioneer of South Africa. So he sent us all a movie, a video, and I'd like to ask him to resend that. I don't know if you were on his mailing list at the time. He sent us a video of a bunch of crippled kids who were having a race, a tournament, and they had a run to the finishing line, and there was a big, big audience there. And so they all started hobbling, and there was one kid who was sitting in the wheelchair, and so he got up and he started hobbling too, but then he fell and he started moaning. And all the other kids, they were at different degrees of reaching the finishing line, and then you see in the video, one is just about to touch the other, touch the finishing line, another one is coming close, and all of a sudden they hear the moan. And because the kid fell flat on his face, and they all the kids together, they all turned around, and they all saw the kid lying down. So they all kind of nodded at each other. Then they ran back to the kid, hobbled back to the kid. They all picked the kid up together, and then they made a line, and they all held on to each other with that hobbling, the worst hobbling kid in the middle, and they all ran together. And they all won, and everybody thought it so much. Because they became the winning team instead of the winning one. Because if I don't help a team member in need, then, and he loses, I ultimately lose because he's on the same team. So, take responsibility for any misunderstanding. That is, I can tell a story in two ways. Let's say I'm a lady and I just got raped in the park at night. And I'm telling a story that these two guys jumped on me and raped me, and I'm the victim of that rape. And so I'm now in victim consciousness. And then I'll always seek to blame others, and I'll always seek to be the victim. Now let me tell the story in a different way. Even though my mother told me not to go out at night alone, I didn't listen. I went into the park wearing my prettiest outfit, and then I had a choice whether to go through the dark park or through the street lights. I chose the dark park. And then I saw some guys there. They were just standing, and I happened to look at them, so I shot a smile at them, and I kept walking. And then I got raped. So one is the victim consciousness, and the other one is the responsible consciousness. So taking the responsibility for misunderstanding in any conversation or anything that happened, I can meditate and see, what could I have done to avoid that? And if I think that way, then immediately my creative genius will tell me what I could have done. Or if somebody is, you're speaking with somebody who's in victim consciousness or who's in blame consciousness, then you can always ask them, what could you have done to have avoided this in the beginning? Well, they did that. Okay, they did that over there. But what did you do over there that made them feel like that so that they did that over there? Like sometimes we start at 3, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But what happened back at 1? What could you have done at 1? And that also goes back to, as you remember from last night, Gurudev said if somebody, if you hit somebody and then they hit you twice as hard, don't get mad at them. You started it. So similarly, if you do something to somebody in the past life or yesterday, and then they do something back, don't get angry. Just see what could you have done. Or if it was your past life, think that I did it to them in my past life. I cheated them in my past life, so now I got cheated by them. Why get disturbed? Then another one is that we can't legislate moods. We can't say, one of the codes of honor is, don't be in a bad mood. But we can say, don't lay your moods out on others. Don't take it out on others. Another one, don't justify. Just admit. Huh? Just admit, I did something wrong, I'm sorry. And really feel sorry. And when you're making a request, make the request very clearly. There's a difference between, now I'm jumping into nonviolent communications for a minute. There's four things to remember in nonviolent communication. Observing, feeling, expressing one's feelings, expressing one's needs, and expressing one's request. So the difference between a request and a demand is that when you make a request, you're not afraid of a no. A demand means, I will not accept a no, and that comes out in the tone of voice. So if I get a no, I'm not worried about getting a no, because a no is not the end. I don't think of a no as the end, that's why I have to make it as a demand, because I don't want a no to be at the end, but think of a no as the beginning. Okay, why not? What's the problem? Well, not, what's the problem? But what's the problem? Another code of honor is to look towards each other's greatness and build a team on the individual's greatness. For example, Nandi Mukhi, Natalie, who I'm going to write to Brajana to get a new name for, although it's hard right now because Gurudev's health isn't well, but we want to get... Actually, you can just do it. You can just write, Jamuna, and say, Nandi Mukhi brings back bad memories, so can you please give her a new name? Say Nandi Mukhi or Natalie is has accountant abilities and other abilities. So let's say there's a Durban team for preaching and book distribution, Bishadam distribution, collecting funds for the book, for your Durban book sponsorship program. So I don't know how to keep accounts. I just like take it in and spend it on Krishna consciousness. So we have, but then that creates doubts in others. Well, what did you do with the money? Or you don't remember how much money you got? And you don't remember where you put it? And then I'll come back later, well, actually I got that much. Or you're depending on your memory? So then, okay, let's have Nandi Mukhi Natalie be the accountant. And then let somebody else be the auditor who has that kind of talent. And somebody else has another talent. So instead of saying, like Rukmini started accounting, being the accountant for the Durban Sangha. And then we say, then we just put her down because she's not a perfect accountant. But she's not expected to be a perfect accountant. She just did her best. So instead of putting her as the accountant and then criticizing her for not being a perfect accountant, put Nanamukhi as the accountant, and put Rukmini as the Prashadam distributor coordinator. Then once once the code of honor is made, we know the principle, out of sight, out of mind. So you forget about it. So the guy who's making the audiobook said, write it big and put it on all the walls of all the people who are on the team so that you see it all the time. You can put it on your refrigerators, on your walls, on your office. It can open up when you open up your computer. So many things. And then he was saying that you can give somebody money as a gift or other kinds of gifts, but the best kind of gift to give anybody is appreciation. That goes the longest way and makes the greatest effect. In fact, that's the definition of a Mahatma, that he sees good in others, even when there's no good, and then it brings out the good. And the person feels, yes, I can do it, and I can do more. I think I might have told you the story when I first met Prabhupada, and I was painting in his quarters. And the second painting I did was from a little picture that he gave me of Vishnu being in the causal ocean. And so I blew it up big, and it was really terrible. His club looked like an ice cream cone. The causal ocean looked like a psychedelic blue solid thing with light blue question marks. His hands looked like baseball gloves, you know, really fat and flat. So after I finished it and showed it to Prabhupada, because I was painting in his quarters, there was lots of devotees there in the room. So Prabhupada said, yes, who could look at that and say that is not God? And so what did I think? Yeah, you know, I don't know if I could ever paint such a good picture again, but I'm sure going to try for this person who loves me so much and is so nice to me. One thing that stated regarding first seek to understand, that if you listen actively, listening actively means sitting in such a way that you look like you're listening, that's active listening, not looking at your watch, not waving to someone and saying hello when the person is expressing their thing, smiling slightly, nodding slightly, responding by expressions, and you don't have to be agreeing at all. You're not agreeing, you're just actively listening. And then asking questions for clarification. Not yes, no questions, because that ends the... And when did this happen? 1989. But asking open-ended questions that let the person clarify for himself and for you, the listener, what he's trying to say. And if we listen actively, then a lot of times we find we agree. And even if we don't agree, when we listen actively to each other, then we'll always agree at the end. If I'm listening actively, I may not agree, but then the person is ready to hear me. Because the greatest need, there are so many needs like food, there are so many needs, but the greatest need for any human being is the desire to be understood, the need to be understood. And I'll go to any length to get it. Then, the next section, we're just like, you know, you join the team where their code of honor or their rules are what you can buy into. Like, follow orders, shave your head, and carry a machine gun. That's the code of honor of the Marines. If you don't want to do that, don't join the Marines. Then the code needs to be specific, like don't be late. Don't be late can mean different things to different people. So in one hospital, some workers thought don't be late means don't be late to punch in to work. Some other team members thought don't be late means to punch in plus get your hospital cloth on and be at your station. So because they had a different understanding of what that code meant, the one that thought it was get your hospital gown on, kept criticizing and blaming the other team, but they innocently just had a different understanding of don't be late. So then they met again, and they agreed on the understanding, and then their relationships got better, and their productivity got better. Now, what do you do when the code is not followed by somebody? What you do is you call it, because if you let it go, then he'll know that he can keep doing it. Others will think, well, then why should I follow it? And then the whole thing falls apart, and then there's no honor. And if somebody who's considering himself a leader doesn't follow it, then number one, the others, the newer devotees, they also won't follow it, although think that this is a creepy leader. So call it, hey, you broke the code. But it must be in a friendly way, and letting the code itself be the police force, not me. That, hey, you broke the code. We promised to be on time, and you were 25 minutes late. And that held everybody else up. But all in a friendly way, and soon after it happens, so that it doesn't linger and doesn't fester and doesn't haunt you. And allow the person to respond, rather than just say, you were late. Yeah, just like, you know, the train. You know, you all know the train story? The guy was in the train. I've been telling you about it 5 times since I've been here. The guy was in the train.
About the children.
I'll just say it's bad. The guy was in the train early in the morning. There was hardly anybody there. Everybody was reading the newspaper. Quiet, peaceful. Then this guy comes in with his 5, 6 kids. They start screaming, ripping everybody's newspaper, jumping on people, yelling. And then the guy's getting really agitated. Who do you think he is? I'm trying to have a peaceful morning. Can't you control your kids? Yeah, I should control them. Because the guy was just sitting there like that, not saying a word. Yeah, I should control them. But we just got back from the hospital. Their mother just died. They don't know what to do. And said, oh, can I help you in some way? So rather than judge, ever since I learned these principles, I haven't learned them perfectly, but ever since I became aware of them, now I notice, because I watch myself, now I notice that every time I assume somebody did something wrong and I judge, every single time I get embarrassed if they didn't. And there's a good reason. So I try to inquire rather than just assume. Allow the person to respond. Hey, how come you broke the rule? Well, I understand. Maybe you could call next time and let us know that you're going to be late, that you had a flat tire on the way, for example. But if I yell at somebody and they got a flat tire, they're going to be really angry at me. They're not going to want to cooperate with me, so I need to keep the relationship good. So any questions on this? Oh, also, if you have an issue with someone, talk to them directly. Don't talk about them to somebody else. Then they hear that you're talking about them, and then there really is an issue where it may have been just in my imagination. So talk directly with them. If you feel you can't, bring in somebody else to help you talk directly with them. Or ask somebody who you know is fully aware of these principles of good communication and ask them, or who's Krishna conscious, and ask them, how should I think in this matter so that I don't criticize and find fault and so that it doesn't upset my bhakti? I don't think I can do that right now. And then suppose you're the one being called on. How do you take it? Again, no justification. Although, of course, if I got a flat tire, that's not a problem. But admit it that, yes, I did do that. I'm sorry. What happened was such and such. And how to not take it personally and get offended and then respond with anger? Pretend you're a third person, which you'll find is very easy if you're doing reflective listening. Or if you're doing nonviolent communication, which I'll show you in a few minutes. Sasanti, can you please go on to nonviolent communication in the internet? Where was I? How to take it. What? How do you start that?
And what assurance.
Oh yeah, admit it. So if I'm doing reflective listening, or if I'm listening with the skills of nonviolent communication, then automatically I don't even have to pretend or force myself to be a third person. I automatically start feeling like I'm a third person. And you're paraphrasing, you're inquiring for clarification, and then the other person automatically feels validated, and even before admitting something, even if you don't admit something, or even if you don't, even if it's just the other person's baggage that they're trying to put on you, and you don't say, yeah, I was terrible, still I feel fully satisfied. And in fact, we're responsible for what we do. We're responsible for how we conduct any conversation, but we're not responsible for how the other person feels. They're responsible for how they feel. We'll discuss that in a minute as soon as we... So then, the process of nonviolent communication is to help them understand. You don't tell them that they're responsible, but to help them understand, you can, if you're coaching them, help them understand that they're responsible for their feelings, and therefore, they can change their feelings. Because if they're not responsible, if you're responsible for their feelings, they can't change themselves. And the next time something happens with somebody else, they're going to feel the same way, and they won't be able to be proactive. They won't be able to get themselves, they won't be able to have a Krishna conscious response. It's response rather than react. For example, I might say something to you. I might call you a bad name. And then you might get angry. And you might think that I'm the cause of your anger. But I'm not the cause of your anger. You're the cause of your anger. Because you could have chosen not to get angry. You could have chosen that, well, you could have just laughed and say, yeah, right, you're right. Or you could have said, in nonviolent communication, so you're upset because you would have wanted me to have done this instead of done that. And the guy would have said, yeah. So then, he's accepting responsibility. Am I talking around in circles or am I making sense? He has to accept the responsibility for his own feelings. But I'll make it more clear later. I'm just introducing that thing about feelings and needs. So then there's the 90-10 principle. 10% of what happens in our life is out of our control. Like you get a flat tire. Of course, it could be, yeah, flat tire, that car rolls over a nail. And I get a flat tire. But 90% of what happens to me is under my control. How do I respond to that? I can respond by getting angry and getting angry at everybody around me. Or I can respond by thinking in a lot of positive ways about it. Well, good, now I have time to chant while the, what do you call it, the AAA comes? The auto. Oh, yeah. I can think about it in positive ways, so that's called the 90-10 principle. And that way I become more responsible for the choices I make. And again, it goes from the victim consciousness to the responsible, proactive consciousness. Any questions so far about anything I've said? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Would you like to do it within your team, like the German team? You can do it within a marriage. You can do it in a Joburg team. You can do it in a Stanger team, the Phoenix team. And you can do it with the whole South Africa team. Can I hear some comments? I know you're shy. Can I still share some?
He's helping our Sangha, you know, the whole of South Africa. Okay? But prior to you coming, giving us this, and we were getting distance, you know. And so we appreciate it.
Okay. Anybody else, any question or comment? Okay, so can you get the nonviolent book?
Yeah. Oh, the book, if I wanted the...
No, I did. I wanted the internet. What we can do is we can give you, if you're interested, anybody who's interested, in hearing more about the codes of honor, we can give you the audiobook sound file. Do you already have it? Did we already give it to you? What did you say?
Yeah.
We can give it to him in Joburg where we have more time, and then he can give it to everybody else. And then, as regarding the seven habits of highly effective people, where did we find that yesterday? Where did we look up?
YouTube.
You go to YouTube, and then you go to Stephen Covey. And then there's lots of videos talking about these really wonderful things. If you're afraid that you'll fall into Maya by hearing from a non-devotee, then don't go. But if you're not afraid, then go. It helps so much, yeah. Okay. So, I'm going to read the back cover. So nothing more on codes of honor? Okay, I'm going on now to nonviolence, and we did seven habits in very brief. So again, you can go to, we're going to give you the audio book. We'll give you the, we can also have an audio book of Stephen Covey, Seven Habits. So like, if you're cleaning, of course the best thing to listen to is Prabhupada and Gurudev singing, giving lectures. But if you, for those of you who really want to master this, sometimes you can do that too. Like sometimes I crash, like every once in a while from so much traveling and speaking. And so then, if I can't move, like for 4 hours, then I'll turn on an audio book and listen to that. Let's see. So, for nonviolent communication, you go on YouTube and then you type in nonviolent communication. There's tons of videos. The guy who started it is this guy, Marshall Rosenberg. So his are going to be really good. And then we're going to show you some other good ones. Some of them are by students and they're not so great. But some of them are really super powerful. And one of the sections of nonviolent communication is parenting. Which we'll show you now, since a lot of you have kids.
It's going to be hard to see.
Then how can I do this? How can we show this to you?
What I could do is I can put it on to TV and you can see later.
Yeah, we want to show something now.
Okay.
So how can we? Where can we go? Where's the best place? How about our bedroom? Oh, it's crowded because it's dark.
Your laptop?
My laptop is crazy.
No, I'm not putting anything on your laptop, just your hard drive, actually.
Oh.
I'm loading up your hard drive.
No.
Can you put it on the flash thing on your laptop? Okay. You could use it on my laptop,
I think the internet's already here. We have to install the internet. And then
Where can we go so that the light is not creating a... Or can we put a curtain over the light? You did that the other day, that was really good. So while you're doing that, while we're getting ready to watch the video, I'm just going to read a couple of things from here. I'm going to read the back cover of this book. And you can order this book also online.
Everyone can just sit right here for a minute and watch. And that'll be good.
Huh?
Everyone can just come.
All right, in other words, light is not on the thing?
It's fine.
Okay, so let's go.
And then if you want to
come around here.
And then Vasanti will pause it every couple of minutes. I'll pause it. Drink water. I'll drink water while we're showing. Okay, so the principles are, there's observation, need, observation, feeling, need, there's observation, feeling, let's do the, my Russian lady that I like.